Welcome to this podcast series for the book, Deliberate Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Ken Wynemco, written by author Bob Hennigy, published and printed by ZG Serve, LLC, copyright Deliberate Injustice, LLC. This podcast was produced by Connie Nesberry International, LLC. For more information, visit www.deliberateinjusticethebook.com. This is your moderator, Connie Nesberry, and this podcast is DNA Holdup featuring Ken Wynemco. Ken, tell us about the day that you learned that you may be going home.
I remember that day for the rest of my life. It was June the 11th, 2003. I was sitting in my cell. I was at the Ryan Correctional Center at this point in time. It was about 7:30 in the evening, and one of the guards came to get me, and he said, "Wynemco, you have to get up to the control center right away. One of your attorneys is up there to see you." It was very unusual for my attorneys to come to see me at that time of the evening, okay? They usually come in the afternoon. So my first thought was, man, I hope nothing happened to my mom. I went up to the control center, and Gail Pamikoff, my attorney, I could see her walk in, and she had this look on her face. I'll never forget the look that she had on her face. And I thought, man, this doesn't look good. Then I started thinking about my mom again. I said, Gail, I said, please don't tell me something happened to my mom, because I had a hard time dealing with my dad when I lost my dad, and I don't know if I could handle losing my mom, you know, when I was still wrongfully imprisoned. Gail said, Kenny, your mom's doing fine. Gail just talked to her about an hour ago, and she's very happy. And she said, Kenny, I don't know how to tell you this. And she said that the final hard copy came in. I am an innocent man, and Carl wants me released from prison the following day. And, you know, I had that feeling, Connie. It was almost the same feeling that when I heard the words guilty. Back then, I felt like someone hit me with a stun gun. And it was almost that same feeling again. And I just sat there. And I remember I put my head down on my arms on a table, and I started crying. And then I got up. I'm not sure I stood up, and I walked around the table, and I grabbed Gail by her waist, and I was swinging her around in my arms. I said, Gail, what happened? What happened? And she said, Kenny, if you put my ass down, I'll tell you exactly what happened, okay? And I love telling that story because it's a feel-good story, and it's true.
So what did happen?
Well, what did happen, I'll tell you, as soon as Gail left and I went back to my cell, I felt like I was floating on air almost, you know? And I told a lot of friends, good friends that I made in there, you know, when I was locked up, what happened, what had transpired with Gail. And we had a big celebration. We called it a cook-up. And what that is, it entails getting ramen noodles together, you know, boiling them, slicing up pickles, Slim Jims, summer sausage, and topping with squeezed cheese, and crunching up Doritos to make for a topping. For us, that was a big thing. Compared to what we would normally get, you know, prison food, it was a feast for us. And there were a lot of guys in my unit that they didn't have anything. They didn't have a TV. They didn't have a radio. They didn't have any clothes other than their prison, you know, their state-issued clothing. And so what I did, I gave away my TV. I gave away my typewriter. I gave away all of my clothes to the guys that didn't have anything. I gave away my tennis shoes. Jeez, the only thing I kept was my rosary and all my legal papers. That's all I kept.
So then what happened the next day?
Well, the next day, following morning, a van from Macomb County came to get me with, there were two Macomb County Sheriff's deputies in there. And now this, and now that I think about this, Connie. I'm sentenced to 40 to 60 years for a rape and robbery, okay? The prosecutor calls me a menace to society, someone who should never see the light of day. They sent two officers the next morning to bring me back to the Macomb County courthouse. They send two women. They don't even put me in cuffs when I'm in the van.
No, so what are you thinking?
I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe somebody finally woke up. You know, well, they must have woke up because they knew the evidence proved that I was not the guy that did this, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's a true story. Now, wouldn't you think a guy that was called a menace to society, you know, a psychopath, given 40 to 60 years, which to me back then was the life sentence, and they send officers to take you back to court, wouldn't you think they would send the 3-4 guys and have me all chained up?
You would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before they brought me in the courtroom itself, they have these little, they call them holding cells, okay? And what it is, it's just outside the courtroom. What it is two toilet stalls, okay? Mm-hmm. And the a normal-sized toilet stall, okay, with the door. And they have screens, wire mesh screens, that you can hardly see inside the cells, okay? They put three people in one stall. Now, can you imagine that? You're sitting there, you know, one toilet, and three people, one person has to sit on the toilet, the other two people have to stand up. They put me in this stall. Gail and Kathy came to see me. They said, Kenny, all your friends are out there, you know, waiting, you know, they want to take you for, want to have a big party when you get home. I said, first things first, get my ass out of here, first of all, okay? So Gail said, I remember Gail told me there might be a problem. I said, what kind of problem? She said, don't worry about it. But she wanted to tell me there could be a problem today. So they bring me back in the courtroom, bring me in front of Judge Servito, and Carl Marlinga had asked for one final DNA buccal swab, you know, to make sure that everything was on the up and up. And that was, according to the law, that DNA statute law, that was his right.
Okay.
I didn't think he was going to do that, neither did Gail. I think the main reason why he did that was to save face. And if he would do that, there would be absolute proof. But from my point of view, Connie, I knew for almost 10 years that I was innocent.
Right.
Nothing matched me from day one, okay? So, and knowing how, knowing that the cops had the evidence in the first place, okay, I knew the cops weren't on the up and up. I knew the prosecutor wasn't on the up and up as well. So I was, you know, I was very, very leery that somehow if I'd give this swab, somebody was going to switch it at the last minute, you know. And I had made that very clear to the judge and to Gail and Kathy Swedlow, who was the co-director of the Cooley Innocence Project at the time. And Gail and Kathy both assured me that that sample would never leave their sight. They would go with one of the officers, take it to the Michigan State Police Crime Lab, you know, to have it tested.
I can understand that after 10 years, how could you even trust anything?
I couldn't, I couldn't. And I think that's a natural reaction, you know. And
oh, yeah, that's normal.
Why should I trust them now? Because I knew they screwed me. They've been screwing me over for 10 years. So after the judge ordered that sample, they took us into an empty jury room right outside Judge Servito's courtroom. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting at a table like this. Gail was on my left. Kathy was on my right. Kim Shine was standing behind me. And they had a couple of cops standing behind me. And then they brought in Carl Marlinga. He sat down across the table from me. And there were about four or five cops standing by him. You know, they wanted to take this buccal swab just from my mouth, okay, from inside of my cheeks. And I told Gail, at the last minute, I said, Gail, tell him to get a search warrant. I don't trust him, okay? She said, Kenny, you don't have to trust them. Trust me. If you trust me, you're going to be okay. I said, okay. So they took that sample. It stayed right there, right in front of Gail, okay? And I told, and Carl was sitting directly across from me. And he was sitting there, he was he looked like he was really nervous, which is understandable, okay? Mm-hmm. And I told Gail, I said, Gail, I have something I want to say to Carl. And she said, Kenny, you keep your mouth shut, okay? And I said, look at Gail. I said, you know, I'm not stupid. She said, I know you're not a stupid person. I said, I've been waiting almost 10 years to have the opportunity to say what I want to say, and I'm going to say it, okay? And she said, well, just be careful what you say, because if you start saying the wrong thing, she's going to kick me in my shin. I said, you kick me all you want. I'm going to say what I have to say, you know? And so I looked at Carl, and I told him, I said, Carl, I says, you know, I've been waiting almost 10 years for this day to come, okay? I said, I want to make one thing very clear to you. I said, I want to thank you for being honest. And I told him, I said, you know, since this whole ordeal happened, Carl, I didn't trust you. I don't trust the cops. I don't trust anybody, because I knew I got fucked over, okay? And he put his head down. I said, but I want to make this, Carl, I want to make this very clear. I said, not only was I praying for the truth to come out, I was praying for you to do the right thing. And he put his head down, and he started crying.
Wow.
And I, then he, you know, he stood up, and he said, Kenny, I don't know how to say I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I said, Carl, no need to apologize. I know that you had nothing to do with it, because Linda Davis and the cops and Osten and Marlette, they withheld that evidence from Carl as well.
Right.
You know, but to this day, Connie, and this is the honest to God's truth, Carl is still the only person that has ever apologized to me. Mm-hmm. And I meet him every so often, and we've appeared, spoken together, you know, different conferences as an exoneree and prosecutor. And every time he sees me, he starts crying. He says, Kenny, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know, and it got to the point where I would tell him, Carl, just shut up, okay? You don't have to apologize to me anymore. I know you had nothing to do with it. But
right.
That's the kind of guy that Carl is.
So, Kenny, fast forward a little bit.
Okay.
So when did the swab information came back, and then what happened?
Well, they took the swab, the final buccal swab, on June the 12th. I didn't, they took me back to the Macomb County Jail. They didn't take me back to prison because I was still under the writ, okay?
You had to wait another 5 days.
Yeah, I had to wait another 5 days.
Imagine how you felt those 5 days.
Well, nervous. Nervous, but confident. More confident, because I knew from day one, you know, after I heard the jury say guilty, I was always confident that the truth would come out. I knew that I didn't commit the crime. And I honestly believe that the cops knew that I didn't commit the crime. That's why they hid the evidence in the first place.
Right.
You know, it's common sense. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. Mm-hmm. But I remember the morning of June 17th, again, I'm looking now and I can picture it, exactly what happened. I was in my bunk, and they have, at the Macomb County Jail, they have an intercom system with each cell to the officer's desk. And it was about 5:30 in the morning, and I hear a voice, why don't you go get your ass up, get in the shower? You got to go down and get ready for court. So I said, okay, what time is it? It's 5:30. Get your ass up. I said, well, I don't have to be in court at 10 o'clock. And Gail told me that there's going to be a separate van that's going to take me to the courthouse. They'll get me about 9:30. Well, she doesn't know what she's talking. Who's Gail? I said, Gail's my attorney. Well, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She doesn't run this jail, okay? Get your ass up. Get in the shower. And I said, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not taking a shower yet. You know, you call me, you wake me up at 8 o'clock like you normally do. I'll take my shower. This cop says, well, Nemko, you're going to get your ass in that shower or not? I said, yes, I am, at 8 o'clock when you wake me up. So a couple minutes later, the door to my cell opens up. They got like a goon. They call it the goon squad. Five or six cops dressed in full riot gear with the helmets, you know, like you see on TV, with the masks.
Did they just come to beat you up or
something? Yeah, to intimidate me. They're very good at mm-hmm. Macomb County Sheriff's deputies and officers at the Macomb County Jail especially. They're very good at that. One guy puts on his, like his lead gloves, okay? He says, you going in that shower? I said, or do I have to help you? And I said, you know what? I'm going to be freed from here in a matter of a couple hours. If you want to be dumb enough to kick my ass and let, so the TV cameras can see me, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
I said, you go right ahead, okay? Well, what do you think? You think I'm afraid of that? I said, personally, yeah, I think you are. And then they got together, they walked out of my cell, and they walked away. 8 o'clock, I got the call. Wanko, time for your shower. Very nice voice, you know. Huh. Not get your ass in that shower. Shower time. So I went, took a shower, went downstairs, and it's called a bullpen. That's where they held me, you know, waiting for the event, for my transport to back to the county jail. And, you know, they brought me in front of Judge Civito. I remember Kathy Gail standing right side by side. And Judge Civito said, Mr. Onemko, I want to apologize for what happened to you. He said, you're a free man. You're free to go. And the rest is history.
How did you feel right then, Kenny?
You know what, Connie? I broke down. I started crying. And when the judge said that, I can go, everybody in the courtroom started screaming. And, my son was there. My good friends were there. One of the guys that was there, I hadn't seen. His name is Dusty McCluskey. I used to play softball with him. I hadn't seen this guy in about 15, 20 years, you know. He was there. But I remember giving my son a hug for the first time as a free man, and I just lost it. I'm not gonna deny it, you know.
It's pretty powerful. And when the judge apologized, too.
Yep. He was a good man.
To find out what happened next, listen to the podcast, Made It Home. Thank you for listening to this podcast. We would like to give you a 20% discount for ordering the book, Deliberate Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Ken Wynemko, at www.deliberateinjusticethebook.com. Use code POD20. Order today to learn more about wrongful convictions and how this can happen to anyone. Again, your discount code is POD20.